The Guardian.
Despite lyrics about rooting around in bins and lingering in graveyards, your songs generally, to me, have an affable air to them. Does this reflect your general demeanour?
I am wearing a red nose and a clown jester's hat.
I noticed the big curly wig underneath.
That's
as well.
For those people that can't see. I don't know. I think sometimes I feel like there's a certain type of humour that's really helpful for people to kind of get drawn into a story. I guess it's something that is inherently I want to be quite silly sometimes, and that comes out. It's quite weird to talk about it in this environment.
Yes, in this kind of vaguely schoolroomish way.
Yeah, but I feel it's in flow with the way people live and interact, and it's quite, I don't know, sometimes our role with our friends or whatever seems to be to entertain, and that's I was quite often a bit of a clown with my friends at school or whatever, and that's kind of stayed with me. I'm definitely not the biggest clown in the band, though. There is an actual clown in the band.
What, an actual professional clown?
He's a comedian. Matt Edmonds, the drummer, he's a comedian, so it's quite hard to get in there in the bus, with the jokes. He's sort of fast-cracking, but he's very funny.
Was there a point where you both tried to make the band laugh and then you eventually had to cede to him because
of
his skills?
Yeah, there's quite a few of those moments, basically. But it's very funny because we look at each other with quite a sort of knowing glint, we have a sort of banterous relationship, so that's really nice.
Just to elaborate further on that point, you say there's a type of humour you think that helps people to engage in stories. What type of humour do you think that is?
I don't know. I get there's I like the what people call an sort of inherently British sense of humour that I guess it's pretty much a post-war kind of irreverence that people recognise as back to the Goons and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that I think it's humour that doesn't really put anyone else down. It's almost like a zen kind of humour, because I think that, and then there's this horrible sort of loutish 90s kind of smash and grab humour that was all about slagging everyone off.
Yeah, everybody's up for insults.
Yeah, well, I think it's quite nice to get back to that thing where everybody's kind of welcome to play a little game, and I don't know, it's that's what storytelling is taking on roles and allowing other people to be those roles and allowing other people to be in the story, not cutting it off from anyone at all.
Yeah.
Being, I don't know, that kind of openness. I don't know, when I'm feeling really sort of relaxed or like I'm really living, I often feel things are quite funny.
How do you feel, when do you feel that you're really living?
I don't know, when I stop really bothering to think about what I've got to do or
whether you're living or not.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It's quite nice on stage sometimes. I feel because you're pushed into this sort of little window of having to say these words, even if you said them a lot before, as you sort of have to connect with them if it's going to work. And it's frustrating if it doesn't, but when it does, it it's just you're not really thinking about anything other than what you're doing, really.
Driving
a fast car or something like that.
Yeah. I'd like to go back to the idea of going back in a little bit, but first of all, I'm just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your youth. Were you an urbanite or a country boy?
Mostly country, pretty much all country. My parents moved from South Africa, where I was born, to London when I was 2.5, we lived in London for a year or two, and then moved to slightly naff suburb. We lived in somewhere in Hampshire till I was 5, and then We moved to this beautiful village in Hampshire, just outside Winchester. It was very, you know, home counties kind of, but actually quite old school. It was nice because there was an estate in the village, and basically most of my friends I went to the local school, and a lot of my friends came from this quite rough estate. So it was like having a slightly kind of like quite rough friends whose brothers were all like in and out of trouble, and we were like, what we did would be like for fun, we'd be like smoking out ferrets in like woods and stuff, and
everybody does
trees.
It. Yeah. We've all smoked ferrets.
Exactly. So it was country, but it wasn't too la-di-da. It was kind of lots of poaching and stuff like that.
You do get an impression from your lyrics, and again, you know, we'll talk about the idea of it being a story. It could be all imagined, but of a keen experience of a way of life that's quintessentially English, but maybe not the modern English experience that you might regularly see packaged. Was that well preserved in the part of Hampshire you lived in as a kid? The orchards and the bicycles and the...
Yeah, I think I've found it. Because, like, I always felt, I guess, although I was very young when I came from South Africa, like, that, for a start, that's, like, as a sort of, you know, colonial sort of outpost of Britain, South Africa, like, white South Africa is quite like that. And my family, like, my family that's still there is not, like, archaic in that sense, but there's still the older members, like my grandfather and like my sort of distant cousins who own farms and stuff, you know, they're still like, you know, there's less between them and like people, they're less influenced by like, you know, the modern world is, you know, in such, they're so connected to like basically 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. They're kind of still part of that.
Have you ever been to the Isle of Man?
No.
I would recommend going to the Isle of Man if you want to know what England was like in the 1950s. Actually, I was never there, but yeah. The Isle of Man is amazing. It's like in Aspic.
Really?
Almost. Yeah.
Well, and now it's called the Isle of Sam.
No, why
yeah,
is that?
In honour of the girl that's from the Isle of Man that's auditioning for the role of Nancy.
Oh, my God.
And that, isn't that awful? But I think it's wonderfully... It wouldn't happen anywhere else. Like, they'd just be like, you know, screw her.
Yeah. No, that's true. That is true. That is
a
not knocking her.
He's very British, you know. We've got to stick up for her.
That's right. More power to the Isle of Man.
Yeah.
Just briefly, I don't particularly want to dwell on this, but is it true you then went on to Winchester Private School later on?
Yeah.
How did that work with your friends from the estate?
It was, I slowly lost touch with them. And I wasn't, well, most of them, just because, you know, when you're in different schools. But at home, I just had, like, quite different groups of friends for a while. I'm still friends with a few people from the village and stuff. And it just kind of, I don't know, I felt in limbo, like, for a long time. I don't know, it's kind of, I was 8 years old when I got this music scholarship to go to the sort of feeder school for Winchester College, and that was going to mention that earlier, because that's kind of another part of like finding that old England. Mm-hmm. Was because your life in the school was like pretty much lived within the school, within the cathedral cloisters, and it's kind of, it was really old-fashioned, like, ridiculously so. Like, we walked in a crocodile from chapel to, you know, to Latin classes. And you know,
did you wear any of those kind of Knickerbocker-style trousers?
No, but we did have nice little, like, caps, little sort of, like, very sort of, you know, post-war cap, those kind of schoolboy caps.
Excellent.
And if you were under the age of 10 or 11, you had to wear shorts all year round with long socks and garters.
When I was at primary school in Manchester, which was a state school, you wore shorts for as long as you could, but that was just to prove how tough you were, and you could withstand your legs getting red cold all the time.
Yeah, didn't you not get very hairy legs?
I have very hairy legs.
Oh,
it's
right.
True.
Yeah.
Sometimes I have to apply the Veet. They're so hairy. I get them stuck indoors.
I have to use that me. On my... no, doesn't matter.
Anyway. Well, maybe come back to that topic later on. Yeah, Music Weekly Triple Extra. Now, how do you go about writing a song? How does it start, the process?
I usually pretty much just have... Well, I have a notebook with me. I always had a thing of... I tried to write diaries when I was young. It was, like, quite a fad when we were about 9 or 10. And then I found out quite early that I didn't ever really want to record exactly what had happened. Like, looking back at my diaries from when I was younger, they're full of, like, made-up things. Like, I got my book confiscated by the chaplain because it was too rude. I remember that just didn't happen. Like,
so what was that? You were hoping somebody might stumble on your diary and read it, and go, Johnny's got this crazy life.
I think that was more for myself, because I wasn't going to let anyone else read it. It was just... it was literally just for my own amusement, and also just to see how to see if you could do that. You know, like it's quite a weird thing to work out. You can do is like lie, you know, to lie to yourself, basically. And I think from basically keeping like journals or whatever, I basically started writing in verse from when I was quite young, and I got very into like when I discovered Shakespeare, whatever, I was like, wow, yeah, this is it. Like, you know, he's doing what I want to do, you know.
Did you shift your meter to blank verse immediately?
I tried. It's quite hard to make songs out of blank verse because you've got, you know, it's like basically you'd be writing in 5/4 or 10/8 or something, you know, it's like quite... Anyway, but yeah, it's like... It's a way of making everything sort of tie in, and you've got to find a word sometimes to make the last beat, and so you pick a word that you wouldn't have picked otherwise to make it rhyme or whatever, and it's somehow the perfect word. You know, it's amazing. Basically, you're giving yourself a structure to do pretty mad things and cross metaphors and whatever. So. I wasn't looking at it in that way probably when I started doing it, but like now it's like I enjoy it, and but mostly it's actually just kind of like just feel like finding that rhythm in what I want to say, you know. So it's so I quite like writing on the tube or on the bus or something, because there's quite a lot going on around you and you just feel quite stimulated or whatever.
So you set up a rubric. So it's almost like you've got a mental rubric in your head of, here's the limits within which I can write this song.
Yeah,
and then you try.
But then you have to. It's good to play games with yourself. I keep changing those rules. Like I have a game with my friend Duncan, who plays in a band called the Mules, and we give each other like the title of a song, and then give each other something about the structure and a deadline. And we have to write the song, and that is actually quite easy if you've got that much of a lead on, basically, because it gives you the right to do it. Most of the time you don't feel like you've got the right to say something about what you're going to try and say, but if somebody said like, you've got to do it by 4 o'clock, boy, then you do it.
Yeah, they've authenticated your writing. Who is the Johnny Flynn in your music? Who is the character that's created? Is it substantially you?
In a way, I feel like the Johnny Flynn. If I see it on like a bill or something, like for a gig or something, I kind of like I see the whole operation, like the band and everything, and because that's what we've been operating under. Mm.
How did that come about, the change? Because you were just the Sussex Wit. Weren't you?
Oh, we were. It was just Johnny Flynn, and then it was Johnny Flynn and the Sussex Wit, and now it's just
Johnny Flynn again. Johnny, right? Flynn. Okay.
But we still go under and the Sussex Wit for most live stuff, and I introduced the band as the Sussex Wit. We were basically fairly or not kind of like asked by our record label to drop the Sussex Wit bit because apparently it's confusing. I quite liked it because it was pretty flippant, seemed to me. Like the whole point was to confuse people, but maybe
so it's consu- it's disturbing to consumers. They can't process six words in a title.
Yeah, apparently not. You know, so yeah, I reckon, yeah, all those Shakespeare plays, they were like, oh, I'm going to see Macbeth or What You Will You Want To. And now it's just Macbeth. Basically. Same thing happened
yeah,
to
I
us.
Suppose, I suppose yeah. That brand has travelled well that's after the abbreviation.
Yeah.
Now, to move away from the lyrics into the actual music, now there are distinct, and again, this is the, there are parallels with what we're talking about in terms of the lyrical content of the songs, but there are distinct strains of English folk. Mm-hmm. Of, say, Fairport Convention and that era of music in what you do. And this is not a scene that's been mined by many of your peers. Mm. What is it that appeals to you about it? Why was it attractive to you?
Well, I think, I guess if there's any, like, if there's anything similar between, like, you know, us and, say, like, what the folk revival people of, you know, Fairport Convention era were doing, it's just because we're all, probably all looking back to the same thing rather than it being a kind of domino thing. Mm. You know, we're not, I'm not taking... although I listen to Fairport Convention, I don't think... I'm inspired by them, but because of what they're singing about... I don't know, there's... If they sing a song about, like, you know, the English Civil War or something, it makes you feel like... The life you're leading now, the times that you're in, become relevant in the same way that they were relevant for those people, you know, that, like, several hundred years on, people are still kind of singing about the social change that was brought about by certain action or whatever. And so it ushers in a sense of the future as well. And I think... I really think that people don't... people are ignorant of the past and of the possibility that that people in societies in the past, you know, could have been like of a sort of, I don't know, they could have been doing something better than us, you know, or there was, and every generation that realizes that, like, whether it's the, you know, the Renaissance or whatever, they suddenly, there's this, like, sort of, it becomes the new age of enlightenment because they understand a lot more about themselves because they realise that actually, look, the Greeks had this philosophy and, or, you know, or for us it would be, you know, the next one behind us. You know, it's just kind of learning.
If we were to simplify it in a way your record company might understand, would it be that, you know, you're not totally about slagging, you've got beyond the point of having to slag off hippies?
Yeah, basically, because, and what, you know, and hippies, like, hippies were pretty important, as were punks, and, you know, I think, and, I don't know, I think, I just couldn't possibly do that so close to home. It's like, my parents were hippies, you know, but I grew up listening to punk music, and I don't want to disown either, and everything that's gone into, like, the last 50 years worth of, like, creative kind of friction and struggle, like, is, you know, it's, like, it's a really wonderful kind of source of energy, and I don't know, it's available to us now, you know, as in hindsight, but there's also, there's a lot more going on now than there ever was, you know, basically. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
No, very interesting.
It's all relevant.
Yeah. I want to ask you about the album Alarum.
Yeah.
Alarum.
Yeah.
Arr. Are you happy with how it turned out in the end?
Yeah, really happy. It's not even like a case of I wish, you know, I could have done a few things better. It's just we have a phrase in the band that we don't get really excited about stuff, but stuff is just pleasing, and that's that's how it is with the album. It's just pleasing. Like it worked out, yeah.
Like a light blooming of spring blossom. It's pleasing on the eye.
Yeah, when stuff goes right, you don't ever think it's right. It is. Like that's how it works, isn't it? You never go. You don't usually go. I don't usually go, more often than not, if you're feeling really good, you probably don't say to yourself, "I'm feeling really, really good." You're just a being. You just are.
Maybe that's what I should do. But I'm always like, "Oh, I'm really. This is great. This is brilliant. This is don't go, don't end, don't stop. Oh, yeah. It's finished."
Yeah, I think as soon as you do that, you call it a specific thing, and it's just like that particular thing can't change into another because you've boxed it in,
yeah,
sealed it up.
And all you're doing is waiting for the next delivery of disappointment. Blimey. Yeah. And what are you going to be doing? What are you going to be doing with this album? Are you going to be touring a lot? Are you playing a lot of festivals this summer?
I thought we weren't doing very many. It turns out we're doing hundreds. Pretty much every weekend and midweek opportunity, we're diving off to another corner of the country.
Are you a tour kind of guy? Do you like living on a bus?
I do like it. I think it's probably not a healthy thing to do like all the time, but we've toured fairly extensively over the last kind of 8 months. We've done about, you know, probably 10 tours, and we're on tour at the moment, so we're going off to Brighton when this finishes.
For the Great Escape.
Yeah. I like it because we get on really well as a band, and like it's a really close team, and
they're happy with your name on the front.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a bit of like teasing goes on because they do a lot, you know, like they're an important part of it. They are as much the band as me, really, and for that reason, because everybody knows that, because I know that, I think it works. Yeah, we're going to America, I think, in September, which is exciting because we just signed to Lost Highway out there to release our record. So that could be really fun. Will be really fun, I'm sure. And then I think, yeah, just summer festivals and then that, really.
Superb. One final question. If there were one thing you would like to have achieved this time next year, what would it be?
Maybe to have finished all the other albums in the like obligation that I have to to the label, and then I could just run free. I think the biggest thing for me is just to like not really change, to allow change, but to kind of not get, I know I won't, but like, you know, to not get to see my friends as much as possible, basically see my girlfriend, you know, just to not let it get in the way of being, you know, a human being.
And keep looking for the odd scrap of food.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Johnny Flynn, thank you very much.
Cheers, thank you.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.